I was just acquainted with a few other people, you know, where I could talk to them, carry on conversation, see what kind of life they led, and they see what kind of life I was leading, and this, that, and the other. You know, just general talk. And everybody was very congenial as far as I was concerned. We liked our foremans, we liked our supervisors. We had no trouble with them. They never did come around and scold us for what maybe we might have done wrong. They would always show us, and then we would retract that and not do it again.
That first day before you went into the plant and actually started working, did they explain to you what the job would be like, or did that happen after you got?
Well, they told us that we would be going into different sections, you know, and it would be up to the foreman of that to place us wherever he wanted us. And they said there's no telling what we would be put on when we went in there. And we were accepting that.
Did they tell you about benefits or
yes,
the salary
and all? Yes, the salary. And then the insurance and the union. But and then we had to make our insurance out to whoever our beneficiary was. And our salary would raise a certain percentage as the months and the weeks went by. We were to get a raise. And we did. But my doggone little. But at least it was keeping us and we were busy. And I was very seldom every absent. Very seldom. Once in a while I feel like I didn't want to go to work, but I would. A lot of times I worked two weeks solid straight.
That first day, what happened when you got to your department? I mean, after you were introduced to the supervisors and the lead people and that?
Well, they just took us to the lead man that wanted, maybe he was behind in his work, or maybe he needed new personnel on a certain job. And that's where we first started. And we were assigned to a lead man.
And then then what did he do? Did he demonstrate the job to you?
Yes, he took us to the part that we were supposed to do, how we were to assemble it with the drill and with the rivet gun, and how to put it together and not to go through it with the rivet gun, and not to drill the other person on the other side of you where you couldn't see, and all kinds of safety, because that was their policy up there at Douglas, safety. They wanted no one hurt. And there's a lot of people that didn't give a doggone. They just, you know, went their way and they got hurt. Maybe you lost a finger or two or a fingernail or something like that. You know, they got reckless.
You said you saw some women get their hair tangled in the
Yes. They brought a new girl in our special department. She was to finish up what my partner and I were doing. And she had this 12-inch drill in the drill motor. Well, she got careless and she put it up behind her head, you know, like that, and the drill was still going. And she had long hair. And she didn't happen to have anything on her head for protection. And that just wound right up in there. And I run real quick and jerked the motor out of the electricity. and it stopped. And we had a heck of a time getting that drill out of her hair. I'd take a chuck key and unfasten it from the motor and then just take it out from there. The lead man come real quick, too. He was right there on the job and saw her do it. And we took about 30 minutes to get that out of her hair, and then they sent her to the dispensary. And she learned a lesson. But we had, you know, we were beginning to be the oldest in the department, and when they'd bring us some new ones, we'd always try to explain to them, you know, to be careful about whatever you did so you wouldn't get hurt.
Were there safety, like, posters and warnings and that kind of thing placed
they were
up, around the
apartment? Yes, they were on the bulletin board, yes. They were on the bulletin board. And our cards, each week, they give us a weekly card, and we go to the time clock and punch our time in. And you put it up in the rack, and the next morning it would be over on the other side of the rack. And we'd go to there, find our number, and go in, punch our time in, and in the evening, we'd do the same thing, punch out. But I don't know, some of the girls, some of the men, they just got a little careless after they got to learn the job. They thought they were so good that they would never get hurt, but I've seen quite a few of them. But all I ever done was just with it.
Was that the first thing that you did then?
Yes.
When you got in there?
Yes. I was to line up the, well, what we call the skin. And it was two pieces of metal, and you had to lap them, or you had to put them on a bigger piece of material and clamp them and drill your holes at the size that they were supposed to, because the papers were right on the parts. From, you know, how to, the directions was where to drill and how to drill, and the size. And we went right to work, right on that. We'd use that as the directions right on there. And we'd use that and do our own work. They said we was the good ones.
And your partner was a woman that you'd gone to school with?
Well, yes, for a little while she was. Because she and I trained together. And as it came along, she was just too big to fit into the nose cone. She was also a pretty good riveter, but she didn't understand about tools, about the guns, and about the motors. I mean, some people just take to it like they've done it all their life. But she was a housewife, I suppose, always lived in the city. And she was a housewife. She was doing her darndest, but she just wasn't good enough. And she was heavy set. And so they had to find me another partner. And they got this girl, she's from Louisiana, I believe it was. And she came in, she was a small girl, where she'd get into the part that we were making to buck the rivets. And then something happened, I don't know just what happened, don't remember. It wasn't, I stayed with her a year, I guess, or longer. Maybe she had to quit and go back home. Some of her relations died or something. And they gave me another partner by the name of Mary. And she and I worked together almost 2 years. And then as, you know, went on, why we went to something else. But we stayed on the nose cones of the motor for a long, long time. I forget now just how long we did stay on there.
Were there very many women working in the plant that first day when you went in?
Yes, yes, yes. Everywhere you'd look, there'd be maybe one man to 10 or 15 women. And usually the man was either the lead man or a man that worked in there for quite some time that knew the job, you know. And some of them would help you know, help us women out. Mm-hmm. But, yes, there was, I'd say 10 or 15 women to two men, at least.
The women that you worked around in the, and, like, were the nearest when you were working, were they about the same age that you were?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. There was a few young ones, but most of them were about my age.
What about older women?
Well, yes. This gal that I first started working with, she was older, way older than I was. But she was a good gal to work with. But she was just too big for the job. They sent her to something else. I've forgotten. But she didn't work there as long as I did. She quit after the war.
How did all the different age groups get along?
Far as I was concerned, they got along beautiful. Just beautiful. They might be one or two complaining about this or complain about this or that person or that person. But I never saw any arguments. And when we went to have our rest periods, we didn't discuss our work. We talked about ourselves or some outside something or something.
What about you having come from Texas? Your background was real different than maybe like the woman that you worked
yes,
with.
Yes, yes.
You lived in the city all her life. And did you ever feel any distance between the other workers because...
Well,
of your background compared to...
Now, the first lady, yes. I thought, gee whiz, she wanted to come in and help out, but she just not up to specifications. And because I'd worked on the farm and the ranch, and I knew all about this stuff, but not enough, you know, because I always did heavy work, and with tools. And, so I just thought, well, now that lady, she just not going to work out. But bless her heart, she did. She got another job in there that would suit her. And she just went on and done the best she could. But she just wasn't the right person for me. And then when I started with this girl from Louisiana, she was all right. She was a very quiet girl. She didn't have much to say, but she did a good job of it. And I think a relative of hers died or something, and she had to go back. And whether she ever come back into the plant or not, I don't know. Then I got with the other one, and she was just almost perfect, although she was a city girl too. But she was almost perfect. And I guess I worked with her about 2 years or something, three, I don't know.
Were there very many other women around you that had come in from, like you said, the one woman that you worked with was from Louisiana, and you'd come from Texas? Were there very many other women who came from out of state that you knew about?
Yes, there were quite a few, but I, you know, just to talk to them as we had our rest periods and stuff like that, you know, we'd always ask one another, where are you from? And they were all from all over. I worked with one girl, she was from Virginia for a little while. And, I don't know, just all over. I never worked with a man. They always had me with a woman. I don't know why they didn't give me a man. I guess they considered that was a woman's job and a harder job was for the man. But I always worked with a woman, always got along with them. And I always had beautiful lead men. Just wonderful to us. We didn't know, we'd yell at him. If he didn't know, he'd go to the supervisor. But it was very seldom that we ever had to call him over. And when the inspector went to inspect our work, mighty few rivets that they would mark. Mighty few on ours.
You deserve that. How did you feel about your first day of work?
Well, I liked it. I thought, well, I'll listen to my own noise. I won't listen to the other people's noises going on. And then a lot of times you had to shout at your partner. But I listened to my own noise because I could tell the sound of my rivet gun and what she was doing in the background, you know, my partner, and whether the rivet was right or whether it was wrong, whether she had clenched it or did something didn't go right. I could always tell by my rivet gun. But that first day was a little bit hard, but the second day I just got out right along.
Were you tired?
No. In those days I was younger and I never got tired. You'd think standing on your feet 8 hours a day, most of the time, except the rest periods and lunchtime, that you would get tired, but no. I got used to the cement, and where we had to stand real still, no moving around, they brought us a little rubber mat. And we stood on that, if we'd have to stand in one place, you know. Of course, nearly all the time I was standing. Once in a while, I'd have a stool where I could sit down and rip it, but very seldom. It was 8 hours a day standing.
Now, when you worked on the nose cone, did the two of you have responsibility for, like, one entire nose cone, and then you...
Yes.
And what would you do with it when you finished?
We would set it overside, and they would inspect it, and we start on another one. I forget now how many we did a day. I think we had four sides to do, I'm quite sure. And it was a row of, I'd say 4 or 5, about 4 feet that we had to rivet on each side. And I believe it was 4 sides. Because she had a low stool to sit on inside of it. And it was on a frame, you know, a jig, in other words. And we'd do our own setup work. We didn't let somebody else put it together. We put it together and clamped it. And we done the drilling of the holes and got it just right. Then we'd have to have inspection on it. And then we'd start riveting, or we'd start drilling the holes. And then we'd have to have inspection on it. And if we had to do the holes like what they call dimpling, to put our rivets in to make them smooth on the outside. And we run the dimple machine on it. If we didn't, we'd send the pieces to the dimpling machine and have them do it. And if they were to crack one and before it came back to us, why then the inspector would mark it and we'd have to drill it out bigger and put a bigger rivet in. But the inspector would have to tell us that. We couldn't put it in on our own authority. Then when we drilled on that so many times and built those so much that they finally put us on pickup work that somebody else had done, and they had done it wrong or made a mistake or put a hole in it or something, bent it or something like that, and we were supposed to do the pickup work on that. And we always did pretty good. So the lead man said, and the inspector marked it okay. I hope it went through all right. I didn't hear of any of our planes fall.
Now, when you worked on the nose cone, did you have to pick up your material someplace, or were they at the site?
Well, sometimes they were in a rack, and we'd have to go to the rack, and they were marked a certain number on there, what we needed. And if the holes weren't always drilled, then we would have to drill them out. But the biggest part of the time, they came to us, and they were drilled, and the biggest part of the time, they were dimpled. So all we would have to do is to put them together, clamp them together, and rivet them. We'd have to remount our holes first before we put the rivet in there. That was always great fun. I always liked that. So we'd just put those rivets in there and just go down that thing in a hurry and get it out of the way so we'd do another one. It was always kind of a rest, you know, to do one and get it out of the way.
And you had a little break in between.
Yeah, well, it took us a little time, you know, to go in and set it up. It was different from drilling holes and riveting, and it was kind of a rest, you know. You go down one of those things and holding a rivet gun, or maybe you are drilling it out, then it would give your hand a rest. And I think I've done that so many years, no wonder my hand goes to sleep now. But I liked it. I really loved it. I love that kind of work.
You told me last time after we finished that about them coming to see how many rivets you could do and to be the fastest riveter. Would you tell me that story again?
Well, see, after the war, that was when they put us on the... DC, I don't know what number it was now, but anyway, they put us on the wing section, and we had a long wing to go. I'd say, long from here to the kitchen, maybe a little bit further, and we had big rivets, and it was heavier metal, and I had an apron on with the size of the rivets in it. And I was right where I could, no strain with my arm and the rivet gun. And I had a good bucket. And we just go right down that line. I just put one rivet in right after the other, and we went right on down the line. And one day, the supervisors and some other personnel, higher up maybe than the supervisors, came by to watch me. And they told us that I was about one of the fastest rivets that just was in the plant. And that just thrilled me to death.
This was after the war, though.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
What shift did you work?
Always days. What was it, 7:30 to 4:30? I believe that's what it was. Yeah, always days. No nights. I had a daughter to take care of. And I had to be there at nighttime.
Did you work much overtime?
Yes, I did. During the war, we'd maybe work 2 hours overtime. And a lot of the times I worked 2 weeks straight, not a day off.
Was that mandatory, or could you choose whether or not to work?
Well, they had taken so many out. The boys, the younger boys or the younger fellows, out of the plant, and it was really, it was your choice. And it was overtime, and I felt like I could use that overtime money. And I wasn't tired, and I went 2 weeks straight without a day off. A lot of times, not too many, but quite a few.
You talked about raises earlier. Did you get those raises as a matter of course, when so much time had passed?
Yes, I believe it was something like that. A certain length of time you were in there, and well, say a month and a half or 2 months, you'd get another raise. Maybe it'd be a nickel or 8 cents or something like that. But I started at 60 cents an hour, and I was getting along pretty good. I thought I was up in the money. But and then we bought the war bonds, too. And I also had a savings, and we skimped. And I had a beautiful lady that we lived with, she and her husband and family. She boarded and roomed all of us people that was in defense plants. I grew about 9 of us in there.
They had a big house?
Yes, she had a big house, and she turned her garage into a bedroom. And a bunch of the girls, I had a very small bedroom, and my daughter and I slept together. And we had bathroom facilities, not in the room, but we had to use it with the rest of them. And the landlady cooked all of our meals. She was a beautiful cook and a beautiful person. And she took us in as her children, all of us, boys and women.
How old was she?
Well, she was a little bit older than I was. Right now, she's up in 70-something, 76, something like that, almost 80. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you still in contact with her?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, she lost a husband and she lost a son. But she still has her 2 daughters, but they're married, or one of them's married, and the other one lives with her. Yes, it hadn't been long ago since I went up to see her. Still the same old lady, and she always talks about us gals and the men that she would and roomed. And she always had our dinner on the time that our breakfast, and she even packed our lunch for us.
And your daughter's lunch, too, for going to school?
Yes, my daughter had to work. Walk about half a block to school. Mm-hmm. And she watched her in the afternoon when she come home and before she went to school, and she did not charge me. Just beautiful. Yeah. And she even fixed her lunch for her. But I thought, well, it got a little bit too much. Why couldn't I fix my own lunch? I felt sorry for her, you know, having to cook all those big meals. But she did have two daughters that's still at home. And they weren't married then. And they helped her a lot, too. But I felt like, gee whiz, I've got nothing to do after I come home. Why not, after they get the dishes cleaned up, why don't I go in there and fix my own? And we'd fix them in a paper bag and put her names on them and put them in the icebox. And all we had to do was go in the icebox next morning and get them out. And away we went. And we always had to open our lunch pail or lunch bag, whatever we had, when we went into the gate for security reasons, and show our badges and our IDs. And that was one good thing about it.
When you switched from working on the nose cone to doing the pickup work, was that considered a promotion?
No, it was the same, I guess. Although we did work on another part of the A-20s after, I guess we got so many nose cones ahead or something, or maybe they gave them to another department to do. And this was a long, it had something to do with the wing, I believe. I forget now just what it was, but anyway, it was a long piece, and it was of the thin Durell mm-hmm. material, and it was still the smaller rivets, and we did work on that and put it together. Then it was shipped on down to another part and was put onto something else, but I believe maybe it was part of the wing. I don't remember now, forget. Mm-hmm. And that's about the only 2 pieces that we did work on all the time that I was in there until the war was over. As I said, then they finally put us on pickup work. And we did an awful lot of that. They'd haul big pieces in there, different parts, you know. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to fix those up, repair them. Mm-hmm. But then after the war, we were laid off. And then I went back. I didn't go back though when they called me. I was working someplace else. Doing the same kind of work, practically. doing a little bit of wiring with it.
Did you have a quota, like that you had to get so much work done every
day? Yes, uh-huh. Well, when we first went in, you